motion for plaintiff's motion for summary judgment by awarding plaintiff benefit for two extremity injuries where plaintiff had requested a finding that the plaintiff was permanently and totally disabled. There was testimony from the plaintiff's family physician that she could no longer work, and there was also in the form of an admission for a request for admission that that was the opinion of the plaintiff's personal physician, Dr. Kibolos. There was also a request for admission that admitted that Ted Strickland was the appointed court counselor, that it was his opinion. She was permanently and totally disabled because of the restrictions that were applied to the plaintiff by Dr. Zawala.
Did Strickland later change his opinion?
What he did was, he was asked to assume different facts. If he assumed different facts, then his opinion changed. But that was attempted to be offered by something that was unsworn. And there's a couple of questions here. The first question is, on a motion for summary judgment, if the judge weighs the evidence, that's obviously improper. if there's a conflict, then the motion is not sustained, the motion is overruled. The deeper question is, whether there's a request for admission, does that preclude a contrary evidence? Here there were requests for admissions that were answered affirmatively that were not admitted or withdrawn, and that takes the issues off the table.
Weren't they just admitting, though, that that was the opinion of these particular providers, not that they agreed with that opinion?
Well,
are you saying that conclusively establishes that fact?
In the absence of, yes, unless it's withdrawn or amended. And this is, first of all, you have the question, if you ask them on a request for admission to admit that it was true, then they would say, no, it's just their opinion.
Right, and so that's not what happened, correct?
No, that's not what happened, but you would never get a request for admission on those points. At trial, the best that Dr. Scholl or Mr. Strickland could offer would be that that was their opinions, not that it's the truth in some platonic sense. And so what they could have done is to say that those are genuine issues for trial, denied. But they didn't do it. They admitted it. Once they admit it, that takes the issue off the table, even though it is an opinion, because those opinions are admissible under 27704, even if they're ultimate issue of facts.
Do the discovery rules regarding responding to requests for admission permit an answering party to say, goes to the ultimate issue, I'm not going to answer it?
I think that if you look at Time Mark versus two brothers or twin brothers, whatever it is, and you look at the discovery rules, yes, you can deny and say that is the issue for trial.
You could say that's what it says. We're not admitting the content or correctness.
That's right.
Well, the workers' comp judge found otherwise. So what is our standard of review here?
I'm sorry?
What is our standard of review?
The standard of review
first of all, is clear error with regard to there was a factual dispute on the motion for summary judgment.
As to the rulings on the issue that you were just talking about, what is our standard of review of what the workers' comp judge did on those issues?
Okay, if it was a trial, it would be like a jury finding. But this is not a jury finding; it's a motion for summary judgment, and there was clear evidence to the contrary. And it was clear that the workers' compensation judge weighed the evidence and chose to ignore the testimony of Dr. Chloa and Ted Strickland on those requests for admissions. At that point, he's weighing the evidence, and there is evidence that there is a conflict as to a material fact, and that is improper on a motion for summary judgment.
Is there a question of law before us on review?
And
how would you frame that?
I would frame that that there is a material, when a material issue of fact exists as a matter of law, the court should overrule the motion for summary judgment.
Is there a question of law as to whether or not the workers' comp, given deference to their rules and the discovery rules and so forth, can properly receive unsworn stuff?
Yes, there is. If you look at rules of the Workers' Compensation Court 10B, is specific that you follow 25-1330 and following for motions for summary judgment. So the standard is stricter for motions for summary judgment than it is for evidence at trial, which would be our Rule 10A. The third point would be that in this particular case, since the evidence is precluded by those requests for admissions, that the summary judgment should have been granted, and and under the Justum Generis rule, the court should have followed what Rule 10B of the Workers' Compensation Court said, and only allowed sworn testimony, requests for admission, answers to interrogatories, and the other things that are outlined in, I believe it's 25-1333.
What part of Rule 10B says that?
The part of 10B says that the court should follow, for motions for summary judgment, the court should follow 25-1330 at Sequi. And that is the part of it. It's part of the at Sequi.
Doesn't Rule 10B also say that in workers' compensation court, the rules of evidence should be relaxed?
No. 10A does, but not 10B. So it's just a generous rule. The more specific rule applies.
So it's your position that even though the rules of evidence don't normally apply in workers' comp the same way, that if there's a motion for summary judgment before the court, suddenly you're kicked out into the evidence rules?
Well, you're not kicked out exactly into the evidence rules. You're kicked out into the motion for summary judgment.
You're kicked out into Chapter 25.
25-1330 at Sequi.
Okay. And so this no doubt came around because you used to couldn't do a summary judgment in workers' comp.
Yes.
Okay.
Assuming all of that is true, how would the situation be different at trial? Aren't all of those things going to come in at trial?
Well, that may well be, but that's not the standard at a motion for summary judgment, and some of these things came in late.
I guess what's worried me about this is error without prejudice we don't fix.
Oh, no, there's prejudice here.
What's the prejudice? If all this stuff is going to come in at trial, and of course you don't get a jury in workers' compensation court, you're going to have the same trial judge. Where's the prejudice? That's what I'm waiting to hear.
Okay. I'll have other evidence to rebut and go further. And from the same, Teresa Olson said that she has a 20-minute restriction on how long she can sit. I can offer additional evidence to counter what they have, what they produced so far. But I shouldn't have to fight that on a motion for summary judgment. And part of the reason, frankly, you file a motion for summary judgment is for discovery. You want to find out what's out there waiting in the weeds. And I have additional evidence at trial that I did not offer at the motion for summary judgment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wade, good morning to you.
Good morning. Members of the court, counsel. May it please the court, my name is Terry Wade. I'm appearing today on behalf of the defendants together with Todd McFaugh. And our position is that in a particularly well-reasoned opinion, Judge Stein got it exactly right. He looked at what the wording was for the request for admission. He declined to engage in a legal game of gotcha by saying, you served these requests for admissions. We were asked to admit that Dr. Chloa opined that there was a 10-minute sitting restriction that resulted in a total permanent inability to ever work again. Second requested issue is whether Ted Strickland, who in his carefully worded concurrence with that said, if you give credence to Dr. Chloa's opinion, then there is a 100% inability to work, total perm and a vernacular compensation. In this case, though, Judge Stein pointed out that an admission as to what the existence of the claims were in the request for admission is merely that, only that they said what they said and nothing more.
Do you think you could have answered those any differently than you did?
I suppose in retrospect, Judge, we could have been perhaps a little more careful, but we tried to engage in a good faith effort to either admit or deny. We had Do they say what they said? Yes, they say what they said. Are we going to argue about their admissibility in workers' compensation court? No. And with regard to the ultimate facts, though, Judge Stein correctly points out that admitting the existence of the documents or admitting those opinions does not result in a conclusive finding that, oh, you're done. Otherwise, if the court were to accept that theory, we're back to some sort of race to the courthouse or race to the discovery rules with servant requests for admissions that say, we have these reports that say these things, admit or deny. You don't cage it in some carefully worded half admission, half denial, then we're going to move for summary judgment. And if we do get thrown into the world of summary judgment, counsel or the appellant wants us to look at 251330 et sec, and I would respectfully urge you to do the same. Because if you look at 251332A, as currently written, it specifically states that the legislature has now recognized, particularly in workers' compensation court, but that's not the way the statute reads it for all summary judgments. A party asserting that a fact cannot be proven or genuinely disputed should support that assertion by cites to materials in the record, including, it doesn't say limited to, but including depositions, answers to interrogatories, admissions, stipulations, affidavits, or other materials. In this case, Judge Stein pointed out that he could receive and review other materials. And we would submit that in this case, Judge Stein didn't do anything with regard to weighing credibility. He didn't have anybody testifying in front of him. He did, however, weigh the evidence. It's clear that he weighed the evidence. He found Dr. Chiloa's opinion, which turns on this 10-minute sitting restrictions, which appears nowhere in the medical records. It comes from the plaintiff's attorney sending a check-the-box letter to Dr. Chiloa saying, does she have a 10-minute sitting restriction? And Dr. Chiloa checks the box, signs it, dates it the wrong year, and sends it back and cashes the $500 check that was tendered with it.
Can I go back just a little bit? Did you say that in the context of the summary judgment, the judge did weigh the evidence?
Well, it's indisputable that that's what he says in his rulings, that he found, here's the important part.
And
of
I guess
Your
the
Honor.
Question is that how appropriate do you
well,
view that?
Well, here's why it's appropriate. Because the plaintiff got what she got. Harkens back to going to look for a pithy quote from an 18th century legal scholar, Gouverneur Morris, but that's what my four-year-old daughter said this week. You get what you get, and you don't throw a fit. And what she asked for, what the plaintiff asked for in this case, if you look at the specific language in her motion, she asked for determination that she had reached maximum medical improvement. She did. We paid her following two successful surgeries. And she asked for a determination of the extent of her permanent partial disability. So evidence was submitted to the judge on that question. Found Dr. no persuasive evidence from the plaintiff. He did not use the word credibility, but he found no persuasive evidence. Instead, he looked to the report submitted under affidavit from the defense expert, Dr. Scott, Douglas Scott, with 30 years occupation experience as a board-certified occupational physician, Harvard University residency trained. Dr. Scott said there's no sitting restriction. This lady had a total knee arthroplasty, was successfully repaired. She had a rotator cuff surgery to her right shoulder, which was successfully repaired. There are jobs she's capable of doing. And the functional capacity evaluation, which Dr. Chiloa said she relied upon, does not contain a 10-minute sitting restriction. That's the crux of the plaintiff's argument, and that's why the remand seems
How do you reconcile that argument with our summary judgment jurisprudence going back over decades that says that the trial court views the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party and gives the non-moving party the benefit of every inference? How do you reconcile that?
Perfectly, Your Honor. We're the non-moving party, and Judge Stein finds, here comes the evidence.
But, okay.
We didn't resist the motion for summary judgment. We agreed she's at maximum medical improvement. We agreed she has some permanent restrictions, and those are set forth as scheduled member injuries. When to her shoulder and went to her knee. They're not whole body.
You didn't file your own motion for summary judgment.
We acknowledged that she had reached maximum medical improvement. She, her temporary total had been paid to her. And now it's time to determine.
But didn't the judge give her something she didn't ask for?
Well, if you look at her motion, she doesn't specify what she asked for. She asked for a determination of the degree of her impairment. And the judge gave her ruling that she wanted, that her temporary total ran for another 6 months post-surgery. And then that applying the evidence to the law, the Reiser versus Nebraska Boiler case in the 2009 decision, following the statute with regard to scheduled member injuries, the judge finds this is what she's entitled to. She got what she got.
Is that a finding that should have been left until the summary judgment was resolved?
Well, that's how he resolved it. He took the evidence in. He didn't weigh credibility, but he did. And we didn't lay in the weeds. It's a workers' compensation court. We didn't say, hey, we've got other evidence if you don't rule our way. The other evidence is still, you know, whatever was not tendered to the judge, whatever was not shown to us by way of discovery. To come into court and say, I've got other evidence, I might rebut all this. It's speculative. The summary judgment ruling was what the plaintiff requested. She asked for a determination of degree of her impairment, and Judge Stein looked at the evidence and received it. And upon remand...
So your argument really turns on the specific content of the motion for summary judgment.
Precisely, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
And the remand would accomplish nothing. I think that's an excellent point. What's the point in sending this all back to the same judge on the same facts with the same evidence to say somehow give us a different result than in the day of judicial economy and expediency, which is what the compensation court is all about? Put our evidence in. Judge Stein waited, looked at it, made his ruling.
If she got something in the nature of the relief she sought, just
she
not as much as she wished.
Precisely.
Okay. So if at the hearing on the summary judgment, if the outcome hadn't said no persuasive evidence by the plaintiff but instead it said something like there's nothing to contradict, would we be having a different discussion instead of using words persuasive as in suggesting
a
way?
Very likely. Very likely. The only other point is that the request for admissions are dangerous precedent, and there are plenty of cases out there cited in our brief saying that the admitting the existence of a document, those opinions are in the documents, is not conclusive to the ultimate fact.
What's our standard of review of what the court did with that?
Standard of review is extremely high for workers' compensation. It's 48.185. Subsection 1 is the only one that possibly applies. And the only time there should be a reversal is if the court acted with or without its statutory authority. Statutory courts. Otherwise, you find yourself reviewing. If there were an error of law. But finding that the workers' compensation court acted with or without statutory powers, I think that's the only one that possibly applies.
Thank you
very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 1 minute and 35 seconds, Mr. Juronic.
Thank you. The first thing is, under Rule 3-6-336, what one can do is a party considers that a matter of which an admission has been requested presents a genuine issue for trial may not on that ground alone object to the request. He or she may, subject to the provisions of Rule 37C, deny the matter or set forth reasons why he or she cannot admit or deny it.
So in real life, that's where there's the narrative for the party responding.
I'm sorry?
In real life, that's the invitation to have a narrative in the answer to
that's
the admission,
correct.
Right?
That's
it says that, I don't agree with it, or so it says.
Well, you can deny. You start off with denying it. You run the risk of...
Depends how the question is posed. Does it say this?
That's very true. So there's two other points. Well, there are the requests for admissions, and if the requests for admissions are admitted, they are conclusive, and that's not what the court held in this particular case. The other thing is, with regard to workers' compensation court, Rule 25.13.32 has changed now. And in your motion, you have to cite the specific references, which you did not have to do at the time of this case. Workers' compensation court, what you do is you submit a proposed order. So for Mr. Wade to say, oh, well, they got what they wanted. No, we were specific in what we wanted, and it was based on the same evidence and the same arguments that we presented here today. And that was the procedure in the workers' compensation court. You could not file a motion by rule of the workers' compensation court without having a proposed order. And we did not ask for this relief in the proposed order. May I say one more thing?
Let me ask. As I'm looking at your motion for summary judgment, it asked for or said the plaintiff is entitled to summary judgment as a matter of law as to the nature and extent of her injuries and her resultant disability. That's what it says.
Yes.
And I am not finding in our record the draft order to which you refer.
That's true. It's not a part of the record, but that's part of the procedure of the Workers' Compensation Court. And I believe it's under Rule 4 that you cannot submit a motion in the Workers' Compensation Court without submitting a proposed order, even though that's not part of the record. Now, what's changed now with 25.13.32 is in that motion, it would not be like that at all. It would be exactly what's in the proposed order in this case.
There's nothing that would have prevented a plaintiff from putting that in the motion under the law as it existed previous to that most recent change, is there?
I didn't think of it.
I understand. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.